Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, even in a divided America, we can agree on some things. A new study shows healthcare, housing, and clean water top the list. The Woodstock Film Festival is back, and we'll talk to the executive director. Plus, puppetry, performance, and creativity at the Urbano Circus. All that coming up after the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments today in a major case. NPR's Nina Totenberg reports it could invalidate the last major provision of the 1965 Voting Rights Act that remains standing.
Once considered the jewel in the crown of the civil rights movement, the Voting Rights Act has been largely dismembered since 2013 by the increasingly conservative Supreme Court conservative majority. The major exception is the provision aimed at ensuring that minority voters are not shut out of the process of drawing new congressional district lines. Just 2 years ago, the court upheld that provision, but now a group of a dozen Louisiana voters calling themselves non-African Americans are challenging the voting rights law, contending that it unconstitutionally discriminates based on race. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
The ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas is experiencing some setbacks. Hamas has released 8 bodies to Israel, but the Israeli military said today testing revealed one of those bodies was not that of a hostage. There are also reports of several shooting incidents in Gaza. These involve Israeli troops and clashes between Hamas fighters battling rival Palestinian militias. The federal government shutdown is more than 2 weeks old. Senate Republicans and Democrats failed again last night to pass a spending bill that would reopen the government. Federal agencies are closed. Most federal workers are not getting paid. But Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told CNBC today members of the U.S. military will get paid today.
We are paying our military today. The Pentagon went into surplus funds and will be able to make the paychecks.
President Trump continues to fire federal workers. Unions representing federal workers have sued the Trump administration. There's a hearing scheduled today on the matter in a federal court in San Francisco. Stocks open higher this morning on news of more big profits at big banks. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 360 points in early trading.
Bank of America and Morgan Stanley both reported better-than-expected quarterly profits, fueled in part by robust deal-making fees. B of A helped two big railroads couple up this summer, while Morgan Stanley helped brew the coffee merger combining Keurig Dr. Pepper and Pete's. The solid results echo the profit reports from other big banks earlier this week. Stock in Papa John's Pizza jumped after reports that a private equity firm wants to take the company private. Apollo Global Management's offering $64 a share. And this was the day we were supposed to get an inflation report for September. That report's been pushed back until next Friday, though, as a result of the government shutdown. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is again up 360 points. This is NPR. About 30,000 nurses and some healthcare workers with Kaiser Permanente across the West Coast are in the midst of a 5-day strike. Workers in California, Oregon, Hawaii, and Washington State are off the job, seeking higher wages. Kaiser says that it has offered the unionized workers above market wages. President Trump honored conservative activist Charlie Kirk posthumously yesterday with the country's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. And NPR's Deepa Shivaram reports.
Kirk founded Turning Point USA, one of the country's largest conservative youth organizations that has chapters all over the country. The Presidential Medal of Freedom ceremony was held on what would have been Kirk's 32nd birthday. He was assassinated last month at an event in Utah. In the White House Rose Garden, Trump called Kirk a martyr and an American hero.
So today, like those martyrs before him, Charlie's voice, his message, and his legacy are stronger and greater than ever before.
The ceremony took place shortly before the State Department started revoking visas of people who they described as foreigners who had, quote, celebrated Kirk's death. Deepa Shivaram, NPR News, The White House.
Retailer Walmart says it's going to partner with artificial intelligence company OpenAI. They say they will use ChatGPT to help consumers shop. It is supposed to assist customers who are searching online for Walmart items, including clothing, food, and entertainment. The Walton Family Foundation is a financial supporter of NPR. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, envisioning a future where learning sparks opportunity and thriving belongs to everyone. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. And the listeners who support this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. We'll get to our upcoming stories in just a minute, but a reminder that it's our fall fun drive, and want to remind you where we are, joined in the studio by Ronald Kelson. Hello, Ronald.
Hello, Tim.
Have you checked the Wheel of Progress lately?
No, I haven't. Please inform me. I know, I'm so bad.
It has moved up a little bit, which is great, and a lot, actually. We're at 45% of our goal.
Wow.
We
Big
have
jump.
Raised $24,497 on our way to $55,000. Thanks to community support. Thanks to everybody who's been donating, including recently Jeff and Christopher and Lisa. Lisa, who signed up to be a sound supporter.
Thank you, Lisa.
She says public radio is an essential resource for small communities. When our government fails us, we must look out for and support each other. Lisa, thank you so much.
Thank
Joanna,
you.
Also donating online at wjffradio.org. So many other folks to thank as well. If we haven't heard from you, now is the time. We also have an incentive for you. We have a challenge from Forestburg. Anonymous in Forestburg has put up $250, and if we meet the $250, that'll make a $500. And guess what? That'll get us to $25,000.
That means 50% more than 50%.
Well, close to 50%.
Close to 50%.
$55,000.
They told me there'd be no math. Anyways,
that's
it'll get
joined,
us closer to our goal, so please. Yeah, that's why I joined. Yes, yeah, so please help us meet this $250 challenge. You can give us a call right now, 845-482-4141, or donate online at wjffradio.org. We want to meet this challenge before 11 o'clock strikes, so please give us a call, 845-482-4141, or go online, wjffradio.org.
As you know, Congress has permanently cut all federal funding for public media, so we need to raise more money. We also need to meet the goals that we previously set, like this fall fund drive. We set our budget right at the beginning of the year, and then we found out mid-year they were yanking the money. So we still have to make this goal, $55,000. Again, 45% of the way there. Really great momentum, considering the fact that we just went on air with this yesterday officially.
Yeah.
But we've been talking about it for a few weeks now, and people got their letters, and they've been sending in, and they've been just stepping up. The support has been amazing, and it's going to take this support to keep going, because it's all 100% local support, community support, listener support that's going to get us through. So 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. Help us beat the $250 challenge and keep that momentum going.
845-482-4141, or go online, wjffradio.org. $250, I think we can do it.
And Duncan, our volunteer, is in the office, who can take your call, say hi to him, and tell us what you like and how you support the station and why. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Now let's get to some of those stories we've been talking about at Radio Chatskill. As the government shutdown enters its 15th day, it seems that as a country, we're more divided than ever. However, a new study from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation shows that Americans share more common ground than not. The New Jersey-based nonprofit conducted a recent study across all ages, income levels, and political affiliations. According to their findings, Americans overwhelmingly place access to health care, affordable housing, and clean water as top priorities. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett spoke with Lauren Smith, Vice President of Strategic Portfolios at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, about the findings of the study and also what candidates in local election races in our area and in next year's midterm elections should be prioritizing in their platforms.
Dr. Smith, can you first tell us what are the goals of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation?
Well, our goal is to ensure that health is a right of all and not a privilege of some. And so our work really is focused on achieving that across the U.S.
I understand that you have a study that the foundation has recently published that has some pretty profound realizations. Can you go into what some of those are?
Well, we're very happy that the study that we did, which included focus groups as well as survey interviews of more than 2,200 folks across the country from all different political beliefs and backgrounds, rural, urban, suburban, we found that when you listen to different people who have different backgrounds and different political beliefs, when they speak up, when they listen to each other, and when they share what matters to them and their challenges, it becomes really clear that we have far more in common than what divides us. We all want the same basic things: to feel safe in our neighborhoods, to be financially secure, to be able to afford our homes, and to be able to feed our families and have clean drinking water when we turn on the faucet. The survey group and the focus groups included people from across multiple income levels, including those sort of that have lower incomes, as well as different education levels, including those individuals who haven't finished high school. And so it really was a group across different kinds of backgrounds. And if people want more information about it, they can go to rwjf.com/commonground.
What were some of the things that surprised you the most about it, if anything?
Well, I'm not sure it surprised me, but I was, in a way, I was optimistic because it showed, the research shows that we want the same basic things. More than 80% of folks said that they wanted to feel safe in their communities. Almost 70% all said that they wanted to be financially secure and to have a good, decent job. People wanted to be able to afford safe housing that was near to where they worked and near to the other places they needed to go. And they wanted to be able to feed their families. So it was encouraging to me that people really felt and found common ground across what they were looking for in their communities.
Do you feel that it's social media? Do you feel that it's news media, corporations that are kind of skewing the difference? Or do you feel like there's even larger powers at play that maybe are making it seem like we're more divided than we are?
Well, I think that there is a constant stream of divisive politics and social media algorithms that seek to accentuate or intensify divisions. And that makes it seem like there is no common ground and that our shared challenges are impossible to solve. But we really need to react against that false idea because there is so much among us in terms of our shared priorities and what our shared challenges are, and a commitment and a desire to want to solve them together. I think that politicians, partisan media, and social media are making it harder to find the kind of common ground that we found in this study.
There's the common goals that we all really want, but maybe get blurred in what people are actually trying to achieve. But then there's also, many people feel that there is simply like certain grounds, even outside of politics, that it feels like you have a hard time even connecting with them on racism or just homophobia or even just the existence of trans people. There's like several issues that it's like this shouldn't even be up for debate. And it feels, some people are like, I don't even want to work with people who feel that way. How would you respond?
Well, I think that I was intrigued that 94% of the people in the survey identified that they wanted to be in a community where everyone felt welcome. Like, that speaks volumes to what you were just bringing up about who people are caring about and who they're concerned about. 4 out of 5 folks that we talked to said that they were concerned that the cost of living was making it impossible for long-term residents to stay in their community and was going to force them out. So I think that there's a lot that people were concerned about that suggests that they have a lot more concern about other folks. The last thing I would say is 94% of people recognized or believed that the zip code where they live, where they happen to live, should not determine whether or not they have access to affordable housing or safe places for their children to play or good schools for them to go to school or even the ability to have clean drinking water when they turn on the faucet. So that tells me that there's a pretty strong feeling and connection across people.
So we cover the upstate New York area, Sullivan County, and obviously it's the national midterm elections next year, but we actually have an upcoming local election. What does this survey find about what people really want in local politics, and what should candidates be really focusing on in their campaigns to build trust with people?
it is very clear that people think governments have an essential role in helping communities solve problems. They especially believe that for certain issues like affordable housing, 94% of people said government has an essential role in helping solve the problem of affordable housing. Now, what's interesting is what level of government people feel most optimistic about or where they feel like they have the most power to make change. And for many people, the majority of them believe that they can make change at their neighborhood level. A slightly lower percent believe that they can do that at their city or state level. And then a lower percent, again, believe that they can do that at the federal level. But overall, people recognize the role of government as being really essential to helping communities solve some of these really important and thorny challenges.
And will you actually work with local politicians to disseminate this information? What's kind of the next step in publishing this survey or getting it out to people?
Having conversations with people like you, being able to really reach out across the country to share this information, because we believe that people are hungry for it. They're hungry to know that there is this common ground, because we're being told in so many ways that the divisions between us are too big to even be bridged, which is not the case. And I think the fact that 60% of people felt that with others, if they worked with their neighbors, they could make a difference in their community. That's really optimistic. We don't agree on everything, and we won't, but this narrative of division really overshadows our shared priorities and values. And I think it harms our health, our well-being, and ultimately our democracy. I think when people have the opportunity to listen to each other, they have the opportunity to identify these areas of common ground.
Before we go, is there anything else that you'd like to bring up today or any other findings from the study that we didn't get to talk about yet?
The challenges that people face really are that they prioritize are the same across all the different groups and regions where we looked at. And the rising cost of living, the lack of affordable housing, the lack of affordable and quality health care, not enough opportunity for good paying jobs, all those were things that really did unite people and people felt strongly about. So again, there really is more that people have in common and that would identify as being common than I think people would lead us to believe.
Dr. Smith, thank you very, very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be able to talk about this.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
Another thing that more people have in common than you would think. Public radio. You support public radio during our fall fun drive, Radio Catskills Fall Fun Drive, going on now. Call us at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We are 45% of the way toward our $55,000 goal. That is great momentum. And to keep us going, we have a $250 challenge from Anonymous in Forestburg. Call us now. Help us get started to meet that $500. If we meet the $250, it becomes $500, and we put that on the wheel of progress and keep getting closer to the goal. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We'll take a break and back with more Radio Chatskill after this.
Coming up on WCNY's The Capitol Press Room, we'll speak with Assemblymember John Rivera, a Buffalo area Democrat, about his bill to reshape the court boundaries in New York. And we'll also hear from an advocate for autonomous vehicles. All that and much more, where we download, stream, or tune in to WCNY's The Capitol Press Room. This afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Well, we've lost the funding of the government.
All of the federal funds have gone away.
Radio stations around the country right now are just hanging on by a thread.
Now we all have to step up to the plate and give.
The community needs to step up in whatever capacity they're able to.
It's so important that everybody steps up extra. I'm stepping up extra, even though I'm not making extra, because it's that important.
Because it's too important to lose.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Or call 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. Some of the great voices that we're speaking to in the community about why they support public radio, why they support Radio Catskill. some of the voices we've already heard from today. Jeff and Samina and Wayne. We heard from Penny, Thomas, Anthony, Joseph, and earlier Mead and Dorothy and Becky and Dylan. So many folks already stepping up. That is Ronald clicking the bell there.
If you getting a workout.
Ronald, if you want Ronald to keep clicking the bell, call us at 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org and make your donation now, 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. Joining us also in the studio, it's our own Valerie Manzi, culture reporter. We're taking a break from the culture to tell us, to give us a pitching help here too. Hi, Valerie Manzi.
Hi. How are we doing?
Well, we're doing okay. You just got in here, 45% of the goal, about $24,497. So we have a challenge from Anonymous.
Anonymous,
Forest
okay.
$250. And, you know, Ronald and I were trying to do math earlier.
It did not go well.
It didn't go
it
well.
It didn't, no.
So now that you're here, help us. If we raise the $250, we get $250. That's $500. That's about $25,000. Not quite 50% of the way toward our goal, but, you know, psychologically, getting $25,000 on Wednesday morning, great to do.
This is, in all my years of experience doing this, this is a first.
It is a first, exactly, because we've been getting such great support from all the folks in the community, really stepping up and standing with Radio Catskill this time. And as we've said, you know, the federal funding is gone. It is kapute. It's out. There is no more. And it's all listener supported. So if you want to keep this station around, we need to hear from you. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org.
I always like to reach out to those who listen but haven't really contributed over the years. Let this be your first time that you're going to support us in a new and different way, because we really do need you now. 845-482-4141. And a big thank you to everybody that has been so wonderfully supportive.
Yes, if we have heard from you already, thank you, thank you, thank you. If we haven't, this is the time to step up and help us out and meet this goal. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. We're trying to meet the $250 challenge from Anonymous in Forestburg before the end of Radio Chatskill at 11. So call us 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. If you're a sound supporter, think about increasing your monthly amount, perhaps an additional $3 or $5. That's what Melissa did. She says, we just increased our sound supporter monthly amount. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We appreciate you and we appreciate so many folks that have come to donate so far. We need to hear from you next. So call us at 845-482-4141. WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. And moving on to some other stories here. Young Republican activists in New York with ties to top party leaders have been implicated in a texting scandal. Politico obtained text threats that had racist, anti-Semitic, and homophobic language. Party leaders who praised some of those activists, including Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, are now calling for them to resign. From the New York Public News Network, Emily Russell has the details.
The text.
Hold on a second.
The texts were sent over Telegram, an online messaging app. Politico obtained nearly 3,000 pages of texts from January until mid-August. They include jokes about gas chambers, affection for Hitler and the Nazis, and hundreds of slurs, including the N-word. One exchange was led by Peter Junta. He's the chief of staff for New York State Assemblyman Mike Riley of Staten Island. Junta is also the former president of the New York State Young Republicans Club. In June, he was running to chair the Young Republican National Federation. In one text thread reviewed by Politico, Junta said, quote, "Everyone that votes no is going to the gas chamber." Joe Maligno, who also has ties to the New York State Young Republicans, responded by saying, quote, "Gas chambers don't fit the Hitler aesthetic." Annie Kakady, New York's Young Republican National Committee member, chimed in and wrote, quote, "I'm ready to watch people burn now." Kakady declined to comment to Politico, while Maligno didn't respond to the outlet's request for comment. Bobby Walker was vice chair of the New York State Young Republicans at the time of the texts and now leads the group. He used the homophobic F-word multiple times in chats. Junta and Walker both apologized for the comments. The two have ties to North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik. Stefanik endorsed Junta for the national leadership position earlier this year. She accepted an award from Walker and the New York State Young Republicans in August. At the time, she described both Walker and Junta as, quote, the backbone of our party. In a statement to Politico, Stefanik senior advisor Alex DeGrasse said the congresswoman was, quote, absolutely appalled by the alleged comments, which DeGrasse described as heinous, anti-Semitic, racist, and unacceptable. Stefanik and New York State Republican Senator Robert Ort have called for the members of the chat to resign. I'm Emily Russell for the New York Public News Network.
Thanks, Emily Russell, for that breaking news. And we are part of the New York Public News Network. That's a consortium of public radio stations throughout New York State that share news and come together to bring you what's going on throughout the state. We pay to be part of that. And so your support helps us continue to be members of the New York Public News Network. Ronald Kelson here with me as well. And Ronald, it's such a great resource to have that we're able to share our stories and also use stories from other public radio stations throughout the state so we can just broaden the lens of what's going on all over.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a great opportunity and resource that we have come by to, again, help us get what's going on right in our area, right in your area, out into the rest of the state so people can learn what's special, maybe what's not so special about our area. Mm. But also, we get to, through this, through the New York Public News Network, get to share with you stories that are happening right in our state, all around the state, you know, coming right to your airwaves, right into your car, right into your phone, right into your house. So if you want to hear more of that, if you want to continue to hear more of that, please consider giving us a call, 845-482-4141, or going online and donating at wjffradio.org.
Your support helps us bring you that news, that state news, of course, all the local news that you hear, and the national news, the international news, and all the great music and programming that you get here as well. Whenever I run into people when we're out in the community and we're either, you know, just out and about or we're at an event, I always encounter someone maybe a little bit new or visiting. And when you say, oh, we're the local public radio station, they're like, oh, there's this recognition of what's going on and who we are. And then when you explain to them, like, well, we have what you might hear on your local radio station, your local public radio station, but we have all this other stuff too, which makes us different. So there's this familiarity, and then there's also this unique part of it, which makes up the whole blend of Radio Catskill. Support that at 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. Haven't heard from anybody just yet on the $250 challenge from Anonymous in Forestburg. So be the first, 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org.
Yeah, we need your support now more than ever. Congress told us to go fund ourselves. Not very nice of them, but what is very nice is that we believe in you, that you can help us fund ourselves. Congress clawed back funding that was already promised to us. They said, here, you can have it. And then they said, no, now you can't have it anymore. So we need you to come out and give us support right now, 845-482-4141 or online at wjffradio.org.
I always like to point out this interesting point, that Congress had approved that funding in March of this year with the current congressional makeup.
Yeah.
And then
and they
rescinded
were like,
it.
No, never mind. Sorry.
Okay.
No.
Make up your mind, guys. Well, I guess they did. So we need you to help us continue here with your support. 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, the Hudson Valley goes Hollywood. We'll learn about the lineup at the Woodstock Film Festival next. You're listening to Radio Chatskill.
Finally, someone's bringing this up.
I thought I was the only one.
I thought something was wrong with my eyes.
I did not know there's a place I can go to complain about this.
My wife says I talk about so much that it's kind of like Grandpa Simpson, like, shaking his fist at the cloud.
Why do they need to have six headlights on a pickup truck? It's just nuts.
Obnoxiously bright.
Jeez. It's like alien abduction levels of brightness.
The streets are like traveling Christmas trees.
The same effect as you would if you looked into the sun briefly.
They absolutely blind me.
Totally blinding.
Blind.
Blinded.
Blinded.
I'm On Point host Meghna Chakrabarty. Listeners are a critical part of On Point. So to keep On Point here for you on this station, please consider giving as generously as you can. Here's how.
Make your donation now
at WJFFradio.org.
Or you can call us at 845-482-4141. On Point comes up in about a half hour at 11, as it does every weekday here on Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno, joined in the studio by Ronald Kelson. We are in our fall fun drive, and we have a $250 challenge from Anonymous in Forestburg, a listener, someone who listens, just like those listeners who support On Point. Support On Point and all the great shows that you hear here with your donation now, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org.
Come on. We haven't heard from anyone, but we believe in you. Be the first one. Be number one. You get to be number one if you come in and give us a donation right now. 845-482-4141. Online at WJFFradio.org. Help us meet this $250 challenge. We've only got 30 minutes left. It's exactly on the dot 10:30.
There you go.
So please.
I feel like Ronald's getting fired up there.
I'm angry. No.
845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org. And you, listener, are always number one to us, but be the first to help us with this challenge by calling right now. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The 26th Annual Woodstock Film Festival returns today and goes through the 19th, celebrating independent film, activism, and storytelling in the Hudson Valley. With 39 narrative features and 27 documentaries, this year's festival spans venues in Woodstock, Rosendale, Kingston, Saugerties, spotlighting filmmakers from around the world. Jason Dole spoke with Myra Blaustein, co-founder and executive director of the Woodstock Film Festival recently. They talked about the premieres, the panels, and what the spirit of indie filmmaking was like when the festival first started 26 years ago.
It was tiny. And there was absolutely no money. I mean, everything was donated and everyone volunteered. It was held only in Woodstock. And it was beautiful. It was magical. But it was small. And that was back in 2000. And then in 2001, it was held 9 days after September 11. So that was a harrowing experience in its own right, but also magical and wonderful at the same time, and very healing for everybody. And from there on, it grew very fast. By 2002, we had a three-page spread in Variety, and people were coming from near and far to the festival, and we had a little bit of money, not much, but a little bit. It has grown. I mean, for the past, I think it's been maybe 5 years at least, four to five years, and now the festival is also a qualifying festival for the Academy Awards in three different categories. And that has elevated it. And also in terms of, there's such a huge influx of film industry folks who have moved to the Hudson Valley, in part because of the Woodstock Film Festival. But just, you know, one thing leads to another, and there's just a lot of growth in the Hudson Valley. And that also really helped the growth of the film festival. And now we are very much what is considered a must stop in the festival circuit for all films that are vying for an Academy Award. And so it has become a more important film festival, and distributors are very interested. And, you know, sort of like the higher echelon of the filmmaking community is much more interested in the film festival. While we are still catering, of course, to the independent filmmaking community, our tagline has not changed. We're still fiercely independent, and the festival is very much about that. But we are also, an important stop for filmmakers, for studios, for film distributors who are promoting their films to be nominated for an Academy Award.
I'll say, you were talking about that higher echelon. I mean, this year's program features some pretty big directors like Noah Baumbach, Richard Linklater, Chloe Zhao. What does it mean for Woodstock to be hosting premieres from such acclaimed filmmakers?
And also filmmakers like Gus Van Sant. Yeah, that's again, we have come a long way from the modest beginnings. It's wonderful. But you know, I have been doing it for all these years, so for me to see that growth is a very natural progression. I'm just happy to see that the festival is become, you know, is has become such a meaningful festival for so many people, and I'm always very very happy to be able to support filmmakers, the known and unknown, help them along in their artistic creative process.
But beyond these big names, as you said, you know, you're still like an independent film festival. How do you still balance showcasing these established directors with also working to uplift new independent voices in cinema?
Our commitment is very much for independent cinema. That's a given. And we have a lot of films in our lineup that are by first-time or second-time directors, and various world premieres also by emerging filmmakers. And don't forget that we have about 90 short films in all categories, animation, documentary, and narrative. I always feel that having that balance between the Gus Van Sant and Noah Baumbach of the world and those names that you haven't heard of yet, there's a give and take between all of those. And when you have the high visibility films and they get some attention, it helps to shed light on those that deserve the high visibility but don't have it yet. And then vice versa, for those who are have already seen a lot of success, it's actually very rewarding for them and interesting for them to rub shoulders and get to know the new creatives and discover their talent and maybe work with them in the future. So it's very much a symbiotic relationship between the more known ones and the ones that you will get to know in the future. And hopefully the Woodstock Film Festival will do its part to help that along.
And besides recognizable names in the lineups of the films that you're showcasing, there's also recognizable folks on hand to have live panels and conversations, folks like Mark Duplass, Brad Dourif, Mariska Hargitay. What can audiences expect from discussions like those?
Well, we have 9 different panels this year, which is a lot. Some of them are intimate, just conversations, like the one between Mariska Hargitay and film critic and journalist and novelist Selma Adams. That will be just about Mariska's work, specifically her recent film about her mother, My Mom Jane. And then you have this conversation between Brad Dourif and filmmaker Larry Fessenden, who is an independent filmmaker specializing in horror movies. Larry will be talking to Brad about his whole career. I mean, starting with films like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, where he was, you know, his character was character of Billy, who, if you may recall, ended up committing suicide in the film. He was really the most moving character, I thought. But then also into his more latest work on films like Chucky. So you're going to have intimate conversations. There's also another wonderful, wonderful one with legendary composer and musician David Amram, who is going to celebrate his 95th birthday in November. And he's going to be talking with 2-time Academy Award-winning filmmaker Barbara Koppel about his film scoring career. He's also going to be playing music live at the panel and show clips. He's a great musician. So we have things like that, like just one-on-one conversations. And then you have panel discussions that are more about subjects. And there's a panel about, it's really going to focus on the future of film. Where is it going? Taking into consideration the reduction in federal funding for the arts and the effects of the streamers on the independent filmmakers. So we have gathered a group of absolute experts who, this is what they're dealing now with, what's happening. I mean, where's the filmmaking community going in the future, and how to make that sustainable? So, the conversations like that is a conversation about, you know, what does success mean in documentary filmmaking? Is it awards? Is it money? Is it prestige? And how do you go about that? So there's going to be those two different things: the larger issues that will feature experts in the field, and the more intimate conversations, the one-on-ones, when you really delve into the life and work of one or two individuals.
I want to talk a little bit about the impact of the film festival on filmmaking in the Hudson Valley, which is something that you just mentioned. But I feel like I should mention that the Hudson Valley recently lost a major advocate for filmmaking in the region. Yes. With the passing this summer of Laurent Reto. He was a Hudson Valley Film Commission, but also he co-founded the Woodstock Film Festival. I was just wondering if you could just speak for a moment about his loss and if that has any impact on what you're doing this year.
Yes, thank you for asking that. Obviously, it's a huge loss. His legacy is immeasurable. We are actually launching a new award in his name. It's going to be called the Laurent Reto Made in the Hudson Valley Award, and we'll present it for the first time at our award ceremony Saturday at the festival, and actor Melissa Leo will be the one to presenting that award to a film that is showing at the festival. I can't tell you which, but a film that is showing at the festival, and that film will be the recipient of this inaugural award. I met the person who is taking over the film commission. She's wonderful, Stacey. She has huge shoes to fill, of course, but she's jumped into it, and she's getting a lot of support from everyone. And, you know, the work continues. And Laurent has established something so incredible and really dedicated his life to that. And I know that she feels privileged to continue his work, and she is doing that. And I don't see that work interrupted. I see that only continuing to grow. The Hudson Valley now is very much on the map in terms of for the filmmaking community and film production. And that will not stop. And hopefully Laurent is out there somewhere above and can see that his work is that he didn't labor in vain, that this is still going on.
Yeah, and the fact that you have Melissa Leo presenting this new award specifically to honor Hudson Valley filmmaking, I think that just underscores Laurent's impact and also just that reality that you're talking about. The Hudson Valley really is a hub for filmmaking now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't see that slowing down or slowing down. I mean, it's at this point now, because it has become so known, you know, the one thing, you know, you start something and then it has a life of its own. So it's just going to continue and grow.
As you look ahead to the future of the Woodstock Film Festival, what are your hopes for the near future and its next chapter? What do you hope to see happen?
Well, I'm always hoping to be able to raise more money. We People think that we have a large budget, but actually we have a tiny budget. It takes a lot of creativity and hard work to do what we do, and I'm always trying to raise funds for the festival. So that will continue, and hopefully my efforts will just become more and more successful as we go on. And I just want the festival to continue and become more. In terms of the quality, to just keep on increasing and get better and better for the many people who work with us and for us to be happy and have a good quality of life as they work for us, and for filmmakers to benefit from being a part of our of what we do, to see careers grow, to see artists develop. Is very rewarding, and so I want to see that continue. And I want just the general public to get a lot out of it. A film festival should be very inspiring. I mean, it should be enjoyable, but it should be very inspiring and educational and fun at the same time. So I just hope that, that the public that attends our events, that they'll get a lot out of it. And I think they can, and hopefully will.
Mira Blaustein, co-founder and executive director of the Woodstock Film Festival. Congratulations on the 26th year of the Woodstock Festival. Good luck with this year's festival. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about it.
Thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure.
And there's more information about the light up of the Woodstock Film Festival at woodstockfilmfestival.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll step into the whimsical world of Urbano's Circus. That's next on Radio Chatskill.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR News. Thanks for sticking with us.
It's Layla Faldin. Thank you for having our back.
It's A. Martinez. Thank you for staying informed with us.
It's Michelle Martin. Thank you for trusting us.
Thank you for supporting this station.
Thank you for supporting this station.
Thank you for supporting this station.
We'll get through this together.
Support Radio Catskill at WJFFradio.org. Thanks.
And indeed, we will get through this together, thanks to listeners like you and to listeners like Melissa and David and Jeff, who helped us close out this challenge. We had a $250 challenge from Anonymous in Forestburg. And thanks to Melissa and David in Jeffersonville, we have met that challenge. We are now at just about $25,000 raised on a $55,000 goal. We are on our way, and we've got great momentum. Keep it going with your call at 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. We're your neighbor's voice, your trusted source for local news, your soundtrack for the drive home, the place where our community comes together. Support that at 845-482-4141. Or WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and this weekend at the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg, the stage comes alive with Urbano's Circus, a whimsical bilingual performance blending puppetry, art, and storytelling. Created and performed by Richard Grun, Urbano's Circus invites audiences into a world where imagination takes center stage. Grun is an actor, artist, and puppeteer, and he joins us live in the studio along with culture reporter Valerie Manzi. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
I described it as whimsical. Is that appropriate? How would you describe the heart of the show in your own words, Richard?
Whimsical, Tim, I think is a good description, but it's also chaotic. So there's some contrast. Whimsical like the wind, you know.
And I also mentioned the performances in bilingual, in English and Italian.
Right.
Tell us more about what inspired you to incorporate the languages and the story that features the characters of Urbano Urbani and his loyal assistant, Vincenzo Pompei.
Yes. So Vincenzo actually is my son, Sheridan. Sheridan Grun, and he'll be with me during the performance. He plays Vincenzo. So the Italian component goes back to when I was working with the Northeast Theater in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and up at Keystone College. And the director during that time was David Zarco, a good friend of mine. And he started a commedia troupe called Zuppa del Giorno. And we trained for like almost a year in the form, very traditional form. And then we put a show together, and Urbano came out of that. He wasn't a puppeteer. He was actually a mute who played the accordion. And he was just, that was it. That was just the character. He was one of the characters in the show. And after that, I liked the character a lot. And I didn't really speak much Italian. And not to say I do today. But what happened was I liked the character, and I had these puppets, some of them from years ago, from when I was in college, and I developed this kind of circus idea, which was inspired from Alexander Calder, the artist, American artist, who has his Circus of Wire, which now is having its 100th
yes.
anniversary. Yeah,
and there's an exhibit now, the mm-hmm. opening on October 18th at the Whitney.
At the Whitney, yes.
So yeah. I was really interested. I couldn't believe it's 100 years.
Yeah.
Alexander Calder.
Yeah, and interesting with Calder, because in the 20s when he made these, his circus, he toured through Paris in galleries to kind of show them off at that time. And I just love that idea. There was something really inspiring about that, of just doing a smaller show and traveling around with it. So that kind of started everything. My first actual show of Urbano Circus was at Paul Austin's Liberty Free Theater.
Which I saw.
Yeah.
Oh, many, you were there. Many
there
months
you
ago.
There you go.
I want to ask you a little bit more about the Calder inspiration. Calder's circus, that sculpture is made out of wire and wood and cloth and yarn and cardboard and pipe mm-hmm. cleaners and bottle caps, these everyday materials. And you make your puppets out of some of these everyday type materials, recycled materials. Talk about the puppetry, the art of making those and how it influences the whole.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So a lot of it, the development of them, certainly in college, some of the puppets, was materials on hand, what I had. It didn't really have to do with, recycling or, those, say, themes or concerns came much later. So it was what I had. And as a result, you obviously, are in a place of trying to figure out how do you get these things to, look like specific characters and get them to move and all those things. And then there's another level to it as to what it is, how unusual they are when you get this contrast, and as you're creating this reality with them, still having that element that that we see in an ordinary object. So, for instance, I have one puppet, Mario, and Mario is kind of like a stilt walker, and he's made out of a television aerial, and he extends and becomes larger, and he walks, this is something that you would see, you reckon, oh, that's what that is. So that's the other level to it. Is that you're seeing this puppet and you don't know what it's made out of, and then you start seeing what it's made out of, and you start getting these other levels of in the experience, in the exchange.
Why do you think live intimate performances that incorporate puppetry remain so powerful in a digital age?
It is that's a problem we have with the flaccid imagination today. There's no doubt. That it's really important too. I teach young children, I see it, but a decline.
It's a decline how?
In the relation to the imagination and play, we've moved into screens and, basically having everything provided opposed to, you know, something that's much more active. So yeah, it's definitely a big concern. with children, and I think for me, go ahead if you wanted to.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what do you hope audience, especially children, take away from seeing Urbano Circus then?
Well, it's play. You know, it's very interactive. You'll be pulled up on stage to volunteer to help Urbano do his circus. It takes place in a garbage dump, you know, which is kind of another. You know, say subtle kind of question that's brought today, you know, like the high levels of consumerism that we have certainly in this country and where all those broken things go, you know. The island of lost toys, you know. A little bit of that, I guess you could say. And the underdog certainly is, you know, rooting for the underdog. Urbano and Vincenzo certainly are. So the show has had, you know, what's interesting about it, I've been doing this since 2000, it started in 2003, and I've been doing the show for a number of years and, you know, different places, of course, but part of it is here upstate in New York and Pennsylvania, and then the other part is in New York City, and then overseas a little bit in Europe and there. So it's really kind of lived this life, and there's been different Vincenzos. So when I was first doing it, the show, Sheridan, my son, I couldn't get a babysitter for him. So I just pulled him into the show and stuck a mustache on him and put some clothes on him and told him about his character, you know, that he doesn't speak, it's nice and easy. You know, and he just has to move really slow. His last name is Pompeii, like lava coming out of Vesuvius. So, and he did it. And he was absolutely brilliant. We had shows in Pennsylvania. Paper Kite Press had a theater there. Some friends of mine that ran it, and in Wilkes-Barre. And so he became part of the show, and that expanded for a little while, and then. A few years down, you know, Sheridan got into high school. He wasn't interested. And then my other son, Dylan, was interested. And we put together a larger show. We performed in New York City at University Settlement called Urbano Circus and the Monster of Garbage. So that really got into the whole over-consumerism, you know, theme of things. And similar story, yeah.
So certainly sparking the imagination right there in your own children. We've got to run, but Urbano Circus is this Saturday and Sunday at the Tustin Theater in Narrowsburg. Great puppetry performed by Richard Grun and his son Sheridan Grun. That is Saturday and Sunday. More information at DelawareValleyArtsAlliance.org. Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate
Cultural reporter Valerie Manzi, thank you. And thank you for listening. I'm Tim Bruno. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at catskillspropertycare.com. And from The Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Congress told us to go fund yourself. So that's what we're doing. Radio Catskill is fighting to keep local news, culture, and NPR alive. Federal cuts are closing stations and silencing voices. But with your support right now, we'll stay loud, proud, and independent. Keep the programs you love and help us serve the community. Go to WJFFradio.org and fund the future of public media today.
You're listening to WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Decreasing clouds, breezy today, high 56, clear tonight with a low of 36. Tomorrow, breezier, a little cooler, 49 for a high, 32 for a low tomorrow night. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.